Welcome to Decoding Sales, a podcast where an engineer, that's me, Alex, and a salesperson,
that's me, Peter,
talk about the art and science of sales as it relates to life and business. In this episode, we are going to revisit virtual sales and the future post-COVID of what sales will look like. In episode 14, we explored the ways in which COVID had really transformed sales and speculated on what was going to stay and what would return to normal. We are now over a year after that episode, so we want to revisit our predictions and talk about the trends we're seeing, make some new predictions about the future, and come to some conclusions about how you can adapt as a salesperson or a sales leader or someone who's thrust into a sales role, if you're a founder, to the new normal. Before we dive into this episode's content, I do want to say a special shout out and thank you to our friends at Sales Room. Sales Room is sponsoring this episode, and we are grateful for it. Peter's actually a user. He'll talk about it in a minute. What they're doing is building a video conferencing platform built specifically for buyers and sellers. So one of the organizations seizing this new future. Peter, do you want to talk a little bit about what you like about Sales Room?
Yeah, I love Sales Room. I love the team. I think it's going to be a key platform for sales teams to really convey an authentic and genuine way of selling. One of my favorite features of the platform is the ability to actually create quick 1 to 2 minute highlight reels of an entire sales conversation that's even like an hour long. I think that the reason why I get so excited about that concept is not only is the technology actually helping us create these highlight reels based off of aha moments in the deal cycle and in the actual video conference, but it also allows you to send this packaged highlight reel off to your champion to be able to have him or her socialize the platform internally and do it in an efficient way. And as we've talked about in previous episodes, multi-stakeholder deals are very important for enterprise deal cycles. So I think this platform is going to help really shorten that and deliver an authentic, genuine way of sales that I'm truly excited about. So they are actually opening up their platform to beta users. So for those interested, please go to salesroom.com and sign up. They're very excited about ushering in a new way of virtual sales and a new wave of sellers that are interested in this type of sale.
That's awesome, Peter. I love that virtual highlight reel feature. It's such a brilliant idea when thinking about the alternative of hopping on more calls one-to-one. Saves time, it saves energy, it puts your champion in the driver's seat of the relationship internally. It's really awesome. So let's dive in, Peter, to the topic of the episode, which is the future of virtual selling. I want to start with the big picture. We talked a lot about how, in our previous episode, the future of sales is virtual, but some companies are going to rediscover this amazing technology called meeting in person, and that it has some value propositions that perhaps do not exist over the internet. So I am curious for your thoughts on how this is going to play out. Are some companies going to eat all of their competition by taking a purely in-person sales approach? Are there going to be hybrid approaches? Where do you see this going? And how do you see people effectively reintegrating that in-person communication at strategic points?
Yeah, my opinion on this is that in-person meetings will actually become even better in this virtual first world. I think most teams will be hybrid. I think it's going to be impossible not to want to strike that in-person meeting and not to want to build that in-person rapport, because there's nothing that's going to replace it. Let's be honest. If you and I hadn't met in person, this would be a fundamentally different interaction and relationship. But what I'll say is the expectations around giving great metrics, data, the right information for the buying cycle won't change. And I think what'll happen is sales teams can focus on the nitty gritty, the objective metrics in a virtual fashion, and then focus on the softer skills in person. Whereas in the past, I think you had this mashing of, we have to get all this work done in person, and then there's a little bit of relationship building. Now you can truly focus on the relationship building in person and highlight, you know, when needed, some of the business objectives. But I think unlocking that human to human genuine interaction will be much easier because you will have gotten all the hard work out of the way in a virtual fashion. So I think that's how things are going to change. And that's what I'm excited about when I meet my customers, is because we're so used to working together virtually that we don't need to work together in person. We can just enjoy each other's company, get additional back channel, obviously, that's important for the deal, but focus more on the intangibles than the meat of the POC, as an example.
Do you think that's going to make it more difficult for salespeople to justify those in-person gatherings, or for that matter, for customers to justify that time? Because I imagine that the results orientation will still be there, and people will look at those rapport building in-person meetings and say, you know, we don't really need a rapport with our vendor. The product works, or vice versa. The product's working. We don't really need to go talk to our customers like in person and build those relationships because they bought it and they like it.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I do think it'll be harder, yes, to justify for customers that are doing well when you're supporting them virtually. But I don't think that's a bad thing. Because if there's a deployment that's stalling, if there's a difficult relationship, maybe you haven't quite broken in to the virtual, you know, cadence of working with a very important customer, then I think, yes, like you try another angle. In-person is just another channel to try and break into the account and improve the customer relationship. And if the customer relationship is doing well, yes, I'm not sure that I can justify a $2,000 trip to New York to meet with a customer that's already happy. Now, there are instances where customers are already happy and you go to New York, let's say, and then you bring together five other prospects in a group setting. That now suddenly becomes a worthwhile trip because you're not just trying to make your happy customer happier. You're actually utilizing the power of that community to see if you can get more business. So I do think it'll force people to prioritize based off of where the deal is and the sentiment of the deal. But again, I don't think that's a bad thing because I don't want my sales rep going out to a random state just to have dinner with somebody who was already happy with the virtual engagement.
I love that point. We had a previous episode, I think it was on using effective email, where you talked about how you saw email, text messaging, phone calls, all those channels you wanted to open up with prospects, and that could be really powerful. So I love that framing of in-person is just another channel that you might choose to open up depending on how the deal is going. And it sounds like your heuristic for this would be there's something a little bit off. The relationship is not quite working in this deal. And so for solving that style of problem, not the results-oriented style, but the relationship style, that's when you kind of choose that channel.
Yeah. And I'll say even for happy customers, of course, like a deal is not just a deal. Once you land a customer, you want them to stay with you for years on end. So I would say there is still a justification for meeting a happy customer because that champion might change. The company might be growing and it's not just a renewal you're looking for. You're actually wanting to look for a long-term relationship. And that does come through in-person relationship building. So I do think it'll force salespeople and sales team to be much more articulate about that and that long-term journey and be strategic about the trip. But I think in both scenarios, happy customer or not, in-person meetings will still very well be justified. Now, on the buyer's side, right, let's say like you're actually going someplace and the seller is not coming to you directly. I think the justification, this is why I love group events, could be, hey, listen, I'm having like six other CISOs come and meet with the TwinGate team, and I want to learn from my peers in person.
Are you seeing this almost like a mini conference?
Yes. Yes. Mini conferences, especially hosted by the vendor, I think can be highly valuable. And, you know, it's something I'm really looking forward to bringing around and having it be not just, you know, mingling and of course, like a nice dinner and drinks, but providing them also under the hood teasers into our product roadmap and things that we might not virtually show, or we might be afraid to send out in a PDF because it's an unformed idea, let's say. Like these things, these bespoke engagements, I think can be still very special in an in-person setting. And that I don't think is ever going to go away.
So let's talk about your own skin in the game strategy here. How is TwinGate thinking about evolving from a virtual only to a virtual first hybrid model? What are some of the things you've been doing with your sales team?
Yeah, I've been doing, you know, first and foremost, more trainings and trainings on virtual selling specifically. Almost every training module has a component of how we're actually going to do sales in a virtual world. The reason why that's different is I'll give you an example. The other day we were training on you know, phraseology of discovery questions. And, you know, when you're trading on discovery questions, you might say, okay, if Alex is the buyer, make sure you ask them, Alex, is this a project that you're urgently trying to get done? Or is it something that you're just opportunistically looking at? Right. And the trading might stop there, but we talk at length about, hey, by the way, like in a virtual first world, you want to give a little bit more space for the person to react. And it's all too easy just to like trample over the person and keep going with your line of discovery questions, but you have to pause. Also, by the way, if there are three people on the other side and you see one person take off their mute button, because you can see that in a video call, you don't just keep going. You stop and you actually point that out, because that's a pretty big milestone moment. If somebody who hasn't been speaking takes off their mute button, you stop and say, Alex, I noticed you came off of mute. Was there something you wanted to ask? And so this like virtual etiquette and training around that, I think, is something we're doing. The other thing that we're starting to do now that like things are getting a little bit better, we are actively talking to our prospects about in-person meet. Hey, when is a time that we could get together? Since this has been such a great relationship, would love to bring you out, or thinking about an event. Would you come to an event like X, Y, and Z? Right. And we're starting to see that conversation as well.
What kind of reaction are you getting from folks right now?
You know, the reaction is excitement, you know, and like a lot of folks go into, oh, like, you know, I have this bar I love to go to. I'd love to show you around if you're ever in this area. It's an opportunity for them to bring in their personality, I think, into the sales cycle. I think it adds an element of casual banter that is just beyond like, how's the weather and how's it been with COVID and your kid being at home and your dog barking in the background.
Yeah, I feel like going to your favorite bar might be a little bit better than explaining for the fifth time that your dog is a little bit sick. And yes, it's cloudy outside. And I'm sorry about the construction next door. So, Peter, one of the things you've mentioned to me about the benefits of a virtual approach to sales has been this idea that it's easier to get calls with folks who are maybe more senior. Can you talk a little bit about what the advantages are, how you're seeing that play out?
Yeah, I think the reason why sales teams virtually, I would say, as long as their outreach strategy is sound, are getting meetings with more senior people, is because it's less expensive for a CIO now to get on a video call than it is to get all the right people physically in a room. And it's also less expensive for a sales team to give the opportunity to, let's say, quote unquote, a junior salesperson to meet a C-level executive. Because the lowest common denominator of interaction now is a virtual room. It's not like going to a fancy New York office building and going to the 56th floor and waiting in the lobby for a CIO who's in a suit. It's, let me go to my home office. Let me disseminate what I think is an amazing technology platform. And whoever will listen, and CIOs now are, you know, they have more time than they're used to, like going to the office and doing that whole thing. And I think it's been like a really interesting experience that I've seen, even with my sales team. We're all getting calls with higher level folks because access to that meeting is easier and the barrier to entry is easier. So I really like that, because I think it's leveling the playing field for buyers and sellers to really focus on the technology. Of course, there's still this, hey, I want C-level to talk to C-levels. And when they get on a call, they're still looking at your LinkedIn profile and trying to judge how senior you are and how credible you are. But as long as you know the technology and you can establish that credibility within the first 5 to 10 minutes of a call, you can actually command the respect of, you know, high C-level person, which is why with my sales team, I spend so much time training on making sure you understand not only TwinGate, but the technologies around this, because CIOs and CTOs and CISOs will give you the opportunity, because the opportunity is a 30-minute virtual call.
Right. And it's just so much easier to slot that onto a calendar than we got to find a meeting room and there's like all these people have to show up and it's just production. I think that's so interesting. And resonates with some of our experience at US Digital Response, where we've been able to hop on calls with government folks who I think would be very difficult to schedule if we were otherwise trying to do something in person.
The other thing too is, one of our main investors, as you know, we've joked about Jeffrey Katzenberg, right? He's chairman of one of our main investing firms. I've been on probably tens of calls with him, maybe close to 100 calls with him, actually. I never would have been in 100 in-person meetings with Jeffrey Katzenberg given his schedule. That's just like an impossibility. But we're now like leveraging his, you know, virtual entry into being able to help us sell. And he's in LA, I'm in San Diego, and my CEO's in the Bay Area. And all of a sudden you have three people in the same quote unquote room, you know, helping to sell a product. Whereas that coordination effort in and of itself could have taken weeks.
That's a really great example. I think it evokes so much of the power of this medium to bring people together for a particular purpose, and really highlights how difficult prior to COVID scheduling anything like that just would have been, because nobody would say, like, let's do a Zoom call. And they would be like, let's do it in person. And then you're like, well, that's not going to happen.
Exactly. Yeah, extremely powerful. That concept of the virtual room being the lowest common denominator is amazing. And we're now going to have technologies like Sales Room that are going to enhance that. And the competitive edge is not going to be, can you get somebody on a Zoom call? Like, that's like obvious now. Can you get somebody on a video call? Like, anybody can do that. The competitive edge is going to be, how can you engage somebody once they're in a virtual environment? And that's easier said than done, which is why the design, the feeling, the nuances, like picking out, like when somebody gets off of a mute, gets off of the mute button, these things are going to be like an art and skill in of itself to extract engagement from a virtual setting.
Well, so I want to talk a little bit more about that, because I do think one of the things that's really interesting in a virtual setting is both that people are very in principle engaged, but they're often not engaged in the primary medium of the conversation. So not necessarily the video chat. There's often a lot of back channel chatter that's going on.
Yeah. So in you're right. In a virtual environment, there's a lot of distractions, text messages, Slack messages, maybe messages within the video call. In terms of the selling side, we leverage those tools quite a bit to make sure we're strategically aligned, given the changes that could happen in a call. So if I start to see somebody tune out on the prospect side, I might ping the account executive and say, hey, Alex, he's actually tuning out and you got to go on to the next step, or you got to point him out to answer a question, or you have to like show something that he mentioned and actually call him out and say, hey, Mr. CTO, as you mentioned in the beginning of the call, here's something that is really important to you. So I'm going to show you how it materializes in the product. So that coordination in the background, I think, is extremely powerful for sales teams. For prospects on the buying side, if you're a buyer, we can tell on the sales team when you're tuning out. And sometimes it gets really annoying, and really it's an irritating thing for the seller, because for the seller, you prepare for the meeting, you're nervous for the meeting, and you're taking time out of your day that could be spent closing another deal. Now, so there's a buyer etiquette, but also on the selling side, what I tell sales teams is you can't obviously call out somebody to say, hey, Alex, I can see you're not paying attention. Like, please pay attention to me. That's just an awkward engagement. What you can do is make sure you're asking questions and make sure you're engaging and actively listening, and then using the prospect's words to help with your pitch and to say, you mentioned this was a pain point. Here's how it turns out. Does this address your pain point? What do you think about this? By the way, Alex, are you excited about what you just saw? Or is this kind of, you know, run of the mill what you've seen? Because I know your calendar's stacked with 12 meetings today. And these types of engagement inducing questions, I think you have to be able to rattle off in rapid fire, because you have a window of time to keep the prospect engaged. And in the first 5, 6, 7 minutes, if you train the prospect to understand that you're going to go fast and that you're going to be asking some questions and some pointed questions where you can't be not paying attention, then the buyer will pay attention, because there's nothing more embarrassing than to say, sorry, can you repeat the question? Because I wasn't paying attention.
Sorry, what did you just say?
There's nothing more embarrassing for a buyer. I've been on the buying side too, to ask, sorry, can you, okay. sorry. I thought you were actually like asking me. Oh my God. I totally fell for that trap. But you know, that's happened to me a bunch of times where I feel really embarrassed. I'm like, oh shoot, I actually didn't hear your question. Can you repeat it?
I'm totally leaving this section in.
Yeah, you should. You should. I hate when that happens. And sometimes there's a good reason. Sometimes I actually say, I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention. I actually had an emergency, you know, client email come in. Can you repeat that question? And that's totally fine, right? That's still a win for the seller. You know, when I ask somebody a question and they're like, sorry, like I had a security incident arise in the background. Can you repeat the question? That's totally fair. I say, that's happened to me before. I say, well, totally okay. By the way, like that incident is probably way more important than any question that I'm going to ask. So if you want to reschedule, we can reschedule. That's a nuanced, like skilled thing to do in a call, to be able to stop and say, you know what, we don't actually need to do this right now.
And you know, that's another place where virtual really shines. If that was an in-person meeting, it would be much harder to cancel and probably harder for you to, you would probably be reluctant to say, let's cancel this meeting, even though it might be the right thing to do because you spent time going there. There's all these other costs attached to the call.
Totally. Yeah. And I've had in-person meetings canceled last minute, and it's the worst thing ever. I've had the receptionist check me into the lobby of the New York office building I was mentioning, and I flew across the country to meet that person and have the meeting canceled. Horrible feeling. But yeah, in a virtual world, again, the barrier to entry, the barrier to cancel is a lot lower.
And you're like, great, I can eat lunch now.
Yeah, exactly. Great. I that's happened to me too. You know, a client moves a call and I'm like, great, I have time to actually heat up my frozen burrito and eat it.
Very different from spending 6 hours in a plane just to get back on the flight, 6 hours in the other direction with nothing to show for it.
Exactly.
Well, you know, I think one of the things that you got me thinking about talking about text message distractions and all these other distractions is how in an in-person world, you end up knowing what everyone is looking at. There's one shared locus of attention, which is the speaker or the presentation. In a virtual world, you have no guarantees about that. And what you're talking about are these techniques for drawing everyone back to a shared locus of attention. I just think that's really interesting and powerful. And it seems to me that this is another area that tooling can probably help. You know, tooling can't solve all these problems, but can kind of help by creating more of an attentive space, a space that's optimized for people understanding and hearing the message. You know, Zoom has like screen sharing, but it's not optimized for that kind of setup.
That is such an interesting thing you bring up. I've been thinking about this a lot because you're right. Zoom is focused on the screen share, but I actually think that's not the most important part of a presentation for the seller, because the seller knows what's on the screen all the time. The seller's done the presentation and demo hundreds of times. So I actually redistribute my screen. And again, this is where Sales Room is really interesting. I've given feedback about this, to blow up the people in the video call and look at their interactions and their engagement and their reactions. And much like I do with the mute button, I actually call out things that I see in terms of reactions. So if somebody were to smile, I would say, you just smiled about what I said. Like, what was interesting to you about that? Like, I'm curious why you smiled. Or you just chuckled. Like, was there, I guess you've experienced that before, that pain that I mentioned. That is like such a like golden moment, because you're building rapport with that person who had that reaction. And to your point about that locus of focus, it changes in a virtual meeting, and it's you as a seller to be able to change that spotlight. And again, I think we'll have software that'll help us do this too, but I love those moments. And by the way, it doesn't have to be positive. It can be also like a look of confusion. Sometimes I'll be pitching, you know, the architecture diagram, but I'll be going very technical. You could clearly see that the prospect is confused. Then you don't just keep moving on and say any questions. You say, hey, Alex, you look a little confused. Is there something I can clarify for you here? That is an extremely adept, advanced phrase, actually, if you think about it, because it's hard for people to go slow to go fast, right? It's hard for people to zoom in and out of calls. And I think that is such a like special moment that is important. And Zoom is way too one-dimensional on that. Screen sharing is not the focal point of pitches.
Yeah, that's really smart and such an interesting point. Blow up the people, focus on them. Catch those nuances. I feel like there could be some powerful software here that helps you with that. Because the problem with screen sharing is you have to look at your screen to some degree to drive the screen forward. You can't cover it. But wouldn't it be great if software would highlight interesting reactions in the moment so that you could see it as it was happening.
Yes. And in fact, you know, these demos, I'm doing the same thing every time I demo, by the way. So why not just hit play on a video? Hit play and pause on the deck.
That's an easy thing you can do today, right?
Yeah. And Sales Room helps you do that. So it's like, I don't actually need to share my screen. And, you know, there's this funny meme out on LinkedIn that says the most commonly used phrase in virtual sales now, or even virtual anything, I would say, is, can you see my screen? Right. But why is it, can you see my screen?
Why is this actually, now that you mention it, not a feature that is built into these platforms? Obviously, Zoom, for example, knows if it is transmitting your screen to someone else.
It's not a high priority because it's also, to your point about focal point of the meeting, it's an opportunity for somebody to grab the attention of people. Because if you say, can you see my screen, even if you know you're transmitting your screen, the buyer has to go back to the Zoom call from their text message or Slack and actually confirm that they can see the screen. But I think this concept of like not even having a screen share be part of the deck and demo pitch, I think is a fascinating thing for sales teams to explore because you're doing the same thing. Why do you need to share your screen to do the same thing you do over and over again? Right. And that I think is like a really interesting thing to explore, especially with all the issues that come up with you trying to, you know, make sure you're not showing anything personal or like your text message or Slack messages when you're sharing your screen.
I just want to pause for a minute and appreciate the brilliance of can you see my screen as a way to draw people's attention to a single shared point. That had not occurred to me. Now that you mention it, it makes a ton of sense. And I that is so smart. I love that. And that is something our listeners should take away from this episode as a tactic. Even if you're 100% sure that everyone can see your screen, it never hurts to ask because now you have them all paying attention.
Yeah. And even if it's for a split second, right? You draw people in.
Okay, Peter. Well, I think that's a really great place for us to end this episode. And before our listeners run, we do want to remind everyone that this episode was sponsored by our friends at Sales Room. And they're in early access. So if you want to learn what the hype is about and get excited to build stronger relationships with your customers, go to salesroom.com and check out their early access program. Finally, please don't keep Decoding Sales a secret. If you liked this podcast, please like us on Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. We appreciate any positive reviews. And if you didn't like what you heard, that's okay too. Just tell us. Email us at podcasters@decodingsalespodcast.com.